everybody. Welcome to tonight's program. My name is Mike Malloy, and I am here to kick asses, take names, threaten Republicans, make fools of conservatives, and challenge any teabagger who is willing to take the challenge to a knife fight. Seven past the hour. Goodbye, Newt. You know, I didn't listen to little Sean Hannity. I call him little. He's not little. He's blown up like a balloon. But I call him little Sean Hannity because he is such a wimp. I mean, Sean Hannity is a wimp. That's all there is to it. He's just a wimp. And I mention him because I don't listen to his program. I don't know if he mentioned what Newt announced today. Now, this puts Hannity in a very awkward position, and Hannity is the only person in America who gets put in this position. Here's the backstory. When Hannity first came to Atlanta back in the mid-90s, he had been bounced out of, was it Berkeley, California? He worked for a college station. He didn't go to college out there, but he worked for a college station. He pissed off a bunch of lesbian women, and they ran him out of town. So he wound up in Huntsville, Alabama, and which is not far from Atlanta. And his big dream was to come to work in Atlanta. Well, he finally got a chance. The program director of the radio station that hired him here, Nancy Zintac, finally offered him a job. They had an opening. So he came to Atlanta. It was the most miserable example of talk radio that anyone has ever heard. The radio station went to work for is ready to fire him. He'd only been here a couple of months. He hadn't signed a contract yet. But Newt Gingrich, who at the time there was still a liberal voice in Atlanta. There was a strong liberal movement back in the mid-90s. It's dead now. It doesn't exist anymore. But Newt needed some help. He was trying to push this class of 94. He wanted to be Speaker of the House. All this stuff that was going on. And Hannity decided to become his gopher boy. All of a sudden, every time you turned on Hannity's program, you heard Newt Gingrich. Well, here's a guy who is, he's a House leader. He's a Speaker of the House, going to be Speaker of the House. When Newt Gingrich got his testicles caught in a meat grinder because he tried to introduce legislation back when Rupert Murdoch was still an Australian citizen. I think he was Australian or the UK, I don't know, but he wasn't an American. And this is before they set up Fox, what has come to be known as the Fox News Channel, which is nothing more than a media terrorist organization run by this sick bastard Rupert Murdoch. But it hadn't been set up yet. So Murdoch offered Newt mountains of money for another one of Newt's books to publish it. I think Murdoch owned Harper's at the time, Harper Row, whatever. And Newt was to reciprocate by pushing legislation through the House that would get rid of this pesky, oh, you have to be an American citizen in order to own a broadcast network. Now, I don't have all the details in front of me, but that's the long and short of the story. So Newt was looking for any kind of support he could get. Out of the bushes pops Sean Hannity, who never has had an original idea in his life. All Hannity ever did. And he used to brag about this. He would get the Republican Party talking points faxed to him. This is before email, really. He would get it faxed to him. And he would spend his 3 hours on the Atlanta radio station redoing, and double redoing the Republican talking points for that day. Well, Newt shows up as a guest, and of course the station he went to work for was kind of impressed with that. Next thing you know, the only place Newt can get a hearing is on Hannity's program. Well, when Newt finally bailed out of Atlanta for good, and of course he's already a representative, but when he finally bailed out and he became real good friends with the terrorist that runs the Murdoch broadcast network and Roger Ailes, and he found out that Ailes was going to open this television thing and wanted some talent, so Newt insisted that as a reward for all the water hauling that Sean had done for Newt Gingrich, that the payback was to put Sean to work, one of the first hires at the Rupert Murdoch terrorist broadcast organization. So they hired Sean. Now, Sean at the time had already moved to New York and was working for WABC, I believe. So that's kind of the backstory. Everything that Sean is, ooh, he owes to Newt Gingrich. And I'm Sean is, as I've said many times, he doesn't have an original bone in his body. He'll do whatever his bosses tell him to do. And whether his bosses were the Republican Party or Rush Limbaugh's shadow or WABC or ABC Radio Network or Rupert Murdoch or Roger Ailes or the Saudi sheikh that owns about 20% of Murdoch's terrorist organization, whatever. When Hannity is told to jump by one of his superiors, he immediately says, "How high?" And then he starts to flex his knees so he can try to make it. So Sean, in other words, is your typical get-along, go-along ass-kisser who has spent his whole career doing just that. Sean Hannity is not a challenge to anybody. He's not like Beck. Beck is a challenge to the very foundation of this republic. Beck is a terrorist. Limbaugh is a challenge to the republic. Limbaugh is a huge, enormous, bloated termite that has been eating at the infrastructure of this country now on to 25 years now. And you go right down the list. But Hannity is not, it never has been a threat. He's in the broadcast industry, it's kind of a joke. But anyway, Hannity now is faced with a very tough situation. Only Hannity won't see it that way. Newt is going down in flames. Newt is about to disappear from the public consciousness. Oh, my God, it's about time. After all these years, Newt is flaming out. What is Hannity going to do? We all know why Newt is flaming out, why his entire staff walked out on him, why his campaign coordinators in four states, everybody coordinated this, and they all said, "We're out of here," and they left. We know why. Because Newt, for just a brief moment, had the temerity to suggest on Meet the Press that Paul Ryan's plan to destabilize the entire economy by privatizing Medicare and Social Security and so on and so forth might not be a good idea. Might not be a good idea. So for those of you who have the stomach for it, I can't. It just hits my gag reflex. Listen to Hannity over the next couple of days and see what this miserable little craphead is going to do. Because all of a sudden, he's got to dump on, and he will. He's got to dump on the guy, Newt Gingrich, who made his career. Roger Ailes never would have hired Sean Hannity under any circumstances except for the political connection to Newt Gingrich. So watch and let me know. Send me an email. Maybe he already has. Maybe he's already dumped on him. But this is where Hannity will show Newt his real colors. Et tu, Sean, will be something I'm sure Newt would like to say because Newt is a historian. And you, Sean. Yes, of course. Only if Newt says, "Et tu, Sean," Sean has said, "No, man, I ain't at nothing yet." So we'll see what happens. You can watch and report. We'll be right back.
I work for Jesus all my days, and on the prairie or in the city, I'll help him round up all the strays. I don't have much to offer him. I'm very small, you see, but I can love my Jesus, and he can still love me. And partner, all I want to do is satisfy my Lord and be the bestest Christian boy in all the whole wide world. I'll be a cowboy, a Christian cowboy. I'll work for Jesus all my days, and on the prairie or in the city, I'll help him round up all the
too short to listen to right-wing radio. Here's Mike Malloy.
21 past the aisle, past the hour. All right, Hannity's first little gig was UC Santa Barbara, not UC Berkeley. Thanks for the email. like we care, right? But might as well keep it real. Anyway, so Newt Gingrich, is just about toast. And who will disappear from this herd of morons next? I think it'll be Santorum, the corpse handler. But Newt Gingrich's campaign manager, senior strategists, several of them, key aides in early delegate selection states, all resigned today. Rick Tyler, who has been Gingrich's spokesman for, what, a decade? Said he and campaign manager Rob Johnson and senior strategists had resigned along with aides in the early primary and caucus states of Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina. I don't know, late this morning, early this afternoon when this happened, if you were near a window, if you would have rolled the window down, if you were in your car and listened, you would have heard two roars. One would be the fires devouring Arizona, and the other one was the stampede of Newt Gingrich aides heading for the exits. All these people cited differences over the direction of the campaign. That's not how it works. The candidate makes those decisions, and perhaps maybe in consultation with the campaign manager. But you don't have an entire political campaign organization head for the exits over a difference in campaign strategy. Get goddamn real. These are paid jobs. These guys make a lot of money. These guys, these gals, they make a lot of money. They got their orders. Dump Newt now. Because Newt forgot Ronald Reagan's 11th commandment. Never speak ill of another Republican. Period. And speaking ill is what happens when you tell the truth about all these miserable bastards that are seeking office under the Republican teabag banner. When you use the truth, you are speaking ill of them. And if you can be eliminated, i.e. Newt Gingrich, you will be. End of story. Now, shortly after the stampede, Newt wrote in a post on Facebook, quote, I am committed to running the substantive, solutions-oriented campaign I set out to run earlier this spring. The campaign begins anew Sunday in Los Angeles. Really? End quote. Really? That's wonderful, Newt. That's wonderful. Meanwhile, some Democrats down here in Georgia came out with a statement that said, quote, campaign staffers of Newt Gingrich's failing presidential bid walked off the job en masse today, demonstrating the power of organized labor and teamwork while serving in a hostile work environment. End quote. You gotta love it. Oh, and his cruise to the Greek Isles with his wife and former adultery partner, Kalista. He took off for a couple of weeks, I guess, and that kind of pissed off the workers back in the trenches. You know, like, wait a minute. But listen, when you have an open-ended account at Tiffany's, that has apparently no limit. When you can charge up to $500,000 on your signature? Ooh, son of a bitch. How that translates with the kind of phony story that the Republican teabags are trying to, once again, cram down the throats of dumb-ass Americans. Well, you know, we're the party of the working class. We want to put people to work. We want to cut taxes so small businesses will hire. We want to do this. We are the party of the people, not those dirty, rotten, communist, socialist, Kenyan-led Democrats. No, it's us. So the guy who thinks that the presidency should be his by virtue of the fact that he is who he is, Newt Gingrich, if he decides to have a $500,000 open account at Tiffany's, eh. If he decides to go on a 2-week luxury cruise in the Greek Isles with Kalista, eh. Mind your own business. I'm a voice of the people. Really. Well, the breaking of Reagan's 11th commandment, A, and B, the fact that Newt was just wide open with his lifestyle, shall we say. Of course, all these Republican thugs are the same way, but they keep it as hidden as possible. And when they do get caught, these men, with their wangs in a meat grinder, like David Vitter, His cohorts in the Senate give him a standing ovation and give him committee assignments. If it's some little wimp-like wiener, resign! Get out of town! Get out of town! Oh, you bad man! The hypocrisy runs so thick, you can walk on it.
So we voted for Republicans. A form of suicide.
Republican side!
Get your news unfiltered, only with Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. I really don't want to get into this again, but I'm going to do this little bit anyway about, Newt's gone. The right wing is now after Romney, but... Where is it? Oh, yeah. You know, the Anthony Weiner thing, when is this going to stop? You know what I'm saying? When is it going to stop? It's astonishing to me how American media and American people can come up with such trivial garbage. Was he a smart mouth? Did he say things to online people that he shouldn't have said to women? Yeah. Could the women have written back and said, you miserable little bastard, I was trying to be nice to you, and you send me a picture of your underwear? You know, so Anthony Weiner, and I've said before, I like his domestic policies. I like the fact that he is kind of a wimp because he fights harder. He and I part company by a trillion miles because he's a Zionist. And being a Zionist, an American Zionist, means that you stomp on the faces of the Palestinian people. So that's where he and I part company. But this hypocritical attack on him. And the fact that this cheesy ass media that we have in this country, they just won't let up, will they? Huh? They're like ravenous dogs. Think about the time spent covering the Anthony Weiner press conference, the Anthony Weiner story, the Anthony Weiner, now it's gotten into the second level, the women he wrote to, or no, that's the third level. The second level, did he really send a picture of his penis? Is that really his? And everybody focuses on that. Meanwhile, we have crisis after crisis building that needs attention, needs discussion, needs leadership. Son of a bitch, I get so tired of living in a society that has to focus on somebody else's underwear. Now, if he seduced children, burn him at the stake. If he committed adultery, let him suffer inside his marriage. If he raped somebody, execute him. But this guy sent pictures. My God, back off! And now these filthy Republicans screaming for his resignation? What about the uncomfortable reality that these hypocritical sons of bitches have? That would be Senator David Vitter of Louisiana. Oh, come on, you punks. You rotten, rotten Republicans. I get so sick of you. Vitter stood there, when was it, a couple of years ago with his poor hangdog wife. My husband goes to a hoe. My husband's name was in the hoe's book. And what happened? 27 prominent Republicans gave a total of $161,000 to Vitter's 2010 reelection effort. And the people of New Orleans or Louisiana? They booted his ass back in. One of those Republicans was John Cornhead, or Cornyn, the head of the National Republican Senatorial Committee. Cornyn called on Wiener to resign. In 2009, he gave Vitter $10,000, and as chair of the National Republican Senatorial Committee, directed another $43,000 to Vitter's campaign, according to Federal Election Commission reports. Records. Boehner has yet to weigh in on Wiener, but if he does, he may have to answer questions about his $5,000 to Vitter in 2010. Boehner doesn't want to call any attention to this sort of thing, because when the hammer finally comes down on Boehner, woo, Lord have mercy! When those chicky poos start coming out of the dark corners of Boehner's life, but even saying that seems to be contradictory to what I just said about the focus on... The point I'm trying to get to, what did Anthony Weiner do? He sent, pictures of his anatomy, partially closed, part of them not closed. Is that, what should he do? Commit goddamn suicide? Is that what they're trying to drive him to? And here you have Newt Gingrich, who is a serial adulterer, running for president. Good God. You want to know who gave to Vitter's reelection campaign? Bob Corker, Tennessee. Chuck Grassley, Iowa. John Barrasso, Wyoming. John McCain, Arizona. John Thune, South Dakota. John Kyle, Arizona. Lamar Alexander, Tennessee. Lindsey Graham, South Carolina. Lisa Murkowski, Alaska. Mike Enzi, Wyoming. Mike Johans, Nebraska. Orrin Hatch, Utah. Pat Roberts, Kansas. Richard Burr, North Carolina. Richard Shelby, Alabama. Roger Wicker, Mississippi. Saxby Chambliss, Georgia. Thad Cochran, Mississippi. Tom Coburn, Oklahoma. Dave Camp, Michigan. Louis Gohmert, Texas. You filthy hypocrites. I'll just tell you, you know, using sacred texts, many of them, although I think they're all horse hockey, you can get the same kind of cosmic advice going to secular sources. But in keeping with the fact that so many people who contributed to Vitter's campaign, reelection campaign, are these Bible-thumping, Jesus-eating Christians, let me remind you, Republican swine, that your own avatar condemned hypocrites to hell. Now, I know what a lot of these right-wing Christians, you know, they have their escape valve. Just like the Catholics have confession. Oh, I go to confession, everything's okay, I can do anything. But as long as I go to the priest, and I do my, you know, my penance, everything. The Christians, the Protestant Christians, have it even better. They can do anything up to and including child murder. And if at the last moment of consciousness they confess their sins to the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, they will be in heaven. You know why they believe that? Because, you know, the story about Jesus turning to the thief on the cross next to him and said, "This day you shall be in heaven with my Father." So there's your proof. You can be the worst son of a bitch on earth. But at the last minute, if you confess your sins and accept the Lord Jesus Christ as your personal Savior, you're home free, sucker. All that damage you caused, all that grief, misery, blood, rot, and stinking, every bad thing you did, washed away in the blood of the Lamb. So that's why all these names I just named for you. All these Republican senators who contributed tens of thousands of dollars to reelect somebody who went to the hoe. And of course, what they'll say is, well, Jesus took Mary Magdalene, the hoe, up out of the street. Mary Magdalene was no hoe. But the rationale?
Well, we have to forgive, you know. Unless it's a Jew, what's his name? Oh, yeah, Anthony Weiner. You know, if he's a Jew, you know, they're the ones that killed Jesus. Did you know that? Yeah, we don't have to forgive no Jew. We don't have to forgive no Muslim. It's kind of strange this to forgive a Catholic, but we can do that.
So Anthony Weiner... Why don't these rotten bastards let up on this guy? You hypocrites. You filthy, filthy hypocrites. I'm going to do Oral Roberts or some of these, what's his name? Franklin Graham, Billy Graham. I condemn you! I condemn you! I condemn you! You will burn in hell! I condemn you! You are beyond redemption! I condemn you! Really? I'm going to pray your ass into hell. I'm going to put an imprecatory prayer on you so hard, you're going to scream, "Help me, Jesus." Really? Whew. I am so glad I got out of that garbage 20 years ago. I almost want to get on my knees and say, "Thank you, Jesus, for setting me free."
It's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. Did you hear this story in Iowa? Republican state senator there named Sean Hamerlink. He's in District 42. District 42, Iowa State Senator. Some kids from student government leaders from various high schools showed up to attend a budget hearing the other day, and they wanted to testify at the hearing about the impact of proposed education budget cuts in Iowa. Now, these are people who would be directly affected by what the Iowa Assembly or whatever the hell it's called there, Senate, I guess, what they're about to do. You know, the proposed education budget cuts. I guess Iowa has a bicameral legislature. I don't know whether they do or not. House and Senate. Okay. So, a senator there, Sean Hamerlink or Hammerlink or whatever, District 42 Republican, told these five student government leaders to get out of the hearing room. He told them to, quote, go home, end quote. This is what he said, quote, I do not like it when students actually come here and lobby me for funds. Lobby me for funds. You see, this is this son of a bitch's own personal money. It's right out of his wallet, right? I do not like it when students actually come here and lobby me for funds. That's just my opinion. I want to wish you guys the best. I want you to go home and graduate. But this political theater, leave the circus to us, okay? Go home and enjoy yourselves. I want to thank you for joining us. And though I have to concede, your time speaking for us is kind of a tad intense. It's probably a pretty new experience. You probably prepared for it for days, and you sat there in front of us trying to make sure your remarks were just right, but actually spending your time worrying about what we're doing up here? I don't want you to do that. Go home. Thanks, guys. I'll be goddamn. That's an Iowa State Senator, Sean Hammerlink, District 42 Republican, with his condescending, snotty-ass attitude about student government leaders showing up to testify to say, please don't cut the education budget. You old bastard, you're already in Iowa Senate. You probably own an exterminating company, too. We are students. Cut something else. Cut your goddamn paycheck. Of course, the kids didn't talk like that. I'm just talking for them in my inimitable cuss word way, right? The nerve of this guy. But this is what Republicans do. They don't give a damn about education. They don't care about kids. They don't care about pregnant women. They don't care about anything except stopping the queers and cuddling dead fetuses before they're dead. Okay, that would be difficult, but that's their dream. Cockroaches. Cockroaches. I don't mean the kind of cockroaches y'all might have up north. I'm talking about cockroaches. Palmetto bugs, the kind that we have here in the south. Some of these suckers are an inch and a half long. That's what these Republicans are. They are cockroaches. Go home, students. I do not like it when students actually come here and lobby me for funds. Well, you people in the 42nd District of Iowa, and I know none of you are listening. You're probably watching the local hog stomping contest someplace, but if you do get word of this from your local newspaper, if you have one, what are you going to do?
Nothing.
Tell you what, Mike, we don't like those little snots going down bothering our Republican senators either. We think that advice was pretty good. Go home. Go home and watch your television. Go home and milk a cow. Don't come here talking to our Senator Sean Hammerlink about his money. Just don't do it, you little snots. You ought to be in church. Wow. Well, State Senator Sean Hammerlink gave the kids a perfect object lesson in how the political system works when Republicans control it. Go home. All right. We have a break coming. We have, do we have a Prairie 2 moment tonight? We have a report card from Kay Petrini. What else do we have to delight and entertain you? Hell, I don't know. We got some stuff here. Hypocritical Republican bastards. God. Oh, and they, all these Republicans, when Vitter did come strutting back into the Senate, they put him on the Committee on Environment and Public Works. They put him on the Subcommittee on Transportation and Infrastructure, Subcommittee on Clean Air and Nuclear Safety, Subcommittee on Transportation Safety, Infrastructure Security and Water Quality, Committee on Banking, Housing and Urban Affairs, Committee on Armed Services, Committee on Small Business and Entrepreneurship. That's how the Republicans treat a filthy, stinking, their terms, adulterer. Anthony Weiner? He sent some pictures of his private parts via the internet. Woo! Crucify! Oh, no, no, don't say that. Wiener's Jewish. We'll be right back.
Lori Morris does.
Welcome back. 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy program. The other night, I read an email from a woman named Elise. Remember that, Kathy? She was talking about her crazy family members and so on and so forth. They're coming to visit. I get this email from her today. Hello, Mike. I love your show, and I love you a lot, but boy, oh boy, was I surprised, to put it mildly, that you read the email I sent last Friday on the air Monday. I presume you receive scores, if not hundreds, of letters a day. That's true. And most of them are positive and interesting. So, since I use my real name, and it's relatively uncommon, a friend of my brother's daughter, heard you and recognized it as me and called my niece. And now my brother wants to know why I'm emailing letters about him to liberal talk show hosts. Then he tried to explain to his, he calls me ditzy moonbat harebrained liberal baby sister, where I'm all wrong politically, and why the hell do we liberals pick on Sarah Palin so much anyway? I said, really? You have to ask? She's the one lobbing the crazy balls? We just hit them. Then he started rambling about Anthony Weiner. Sigh. So, my visit so far with my big brother has been interesting. I'm glad that usually the whole North American continent is between us. He's kind of a religious nut to boot. A weird religion at that. I have a birthday in July, and I told my boyfriend what I'd like is to sponsor an hour of your show. And maybe have dinner at a favorite Greek restaurant. And so we will. And it would be our delight to do so. You're one of the last broadcasters who is a strong voice and lifeline for the ever-increasingly squashed middle class. Thank you, Elise. Well, thank you, Elise. That's funny. You know, in a funny way, in a humorous way. When I read that, it just reminded me of years ago. Oh, God, here he goes again. He's doing that years ago thing. Oh, Jesus, really? What's it going to be about this time? Roadside parks? Nah, he'll come up with something stupid like yo-yos. Reminded me of Reader's Digest from years ago. Reader's Digest? Jesus Christ, what's he talking about? Wasn't that a magazine for old people? Reader's Digest, they used to have a part called Life in These United States. And Elise's letter just reminded me of that. Life in These United States? Oh, my God. Why do we listen to this guy? I don't know. From Prairie 2, the title tonight, but it's not BP's fault. Unemployment claims ticked up another 1,000 last week, continuing what the Republicans affectionately call the jobless recovery. If presidents are in fact responsible for jobs, it should be noted that Obama has produced on average about 1 million jobs a year, which is on par with all modern presidents except one. George W. Bush produced exactly zero jobs during his presidency and oversaw the only decade ever where there was no net growth in the economy. Let me pause from Prairie 2's missive for just a moment. Why do the Democrats not, the ones running for public office, especially the ones running for president or, well, Obama or somebody, why don't they drill that home every single day? George Bush produced not one net job. Not one. And there was no net growth in the economy, the only time that's ever happened. What do you hear from the Democrats? Crickets. Or, well, we think Anthony Weiner should probably resign because, you know, he's really making it rough on us Democrats. It's getting harder and harder to pee all over our shoes now with him standing there. I wish there was some way to get rid of him. Back to Prairie 2. Oil was up for the second day following the failure of OPEC to agree on a proposal by Saudi Arabia to increase production in order to halt speculation-driven price hikes. This move was opposed by a number of oil-rich countries, including Iran and Venezuela, who already produce as much oil as they can. There is, of course, no shortage of oil, so pumping more in hopes of producing a market glut doesn't sit well with the smaller producers. The one thing there is a shortage of is oil tankers, as many are parked offshore with full tanks waiting for the price to go up. Crude oil available to U.S. refineries and stocks of gasoline remain high even as demand lessens. Goldman Sachs and other banks that trade heavily in oil continue to predict $150 a barrel oil and $5 a gallon gasoline while selling hundreds of trillions in derivatives to industry customers to hedge against the wild price swings they themselves are predicting. What's a word for fraud that rhymes with treason? Republicans blame Obama for high gasoline prices based on his imposition of drilling regulations after last year's BP disaster. This week, ExxonMobil announced the discovery of two new proven fields in the Gulf of Mexico, each estimated at 700 million barrels of recoverable oil. Oh. And after reports by fishermen, the Coast Guard has confirmed a 7-mile-long oil slick lying a few miles east of last year's BP well blowout. Reports distributed to news media claim that government tests show the oil to definitely be from a different source. The newsreader I saw said this three times to make sure you understand. This wasn't BP oil. No, no, no. Great. There's somebody else's well leaking huge volumes of crude oil, too. But it's not BP. A major sponsor on this particular network. PrairieNumeral2.com. Remember when the government scientists
and the BP scientists were all in agreement. It's gone. The oil's gone. Look. Look. Look, the beaches are sandy again. Don't dig in there. Don't.
Billy, get away from that goddamn beach bucket and shovel. Get away.
The beaches are pristine and sandy. And look at the water. It's so clear. Look, it's so clear. Look. Dead porpoises? Their radar got jammed. Where did all the oil go? It just disappeared. The oil fairies ate it. But there are no oil fairies. It just disappeared. It was a miracle. Well, then what's this 35,000-foot-long oil slick? Oh, you make it sound so bad. It's only 7 miles. That's 35,000 feet. Oh. Don't know. So when you see those commercials now by the city managers of all those little beach towns in Biloxi, Mississippi, and all along the Mississippi Gulf Coast, and, you know, come on down. Well, come on down here and eat some shrimp. Come eat some lobsters and crawdads and stuff. Everything's cool down here. Everything's 7 mile long oils. Come on down, eat some shrimps.
Yesterday, all my troubles seem so far away. Now it looks as though they're here to stay. Oh, I believe in yesterday. Suddenly, there's a shadow hanging over me. I'm not half the man I used to be. Oh, yesterday.
Yeah, I am. You're my girl.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. What was I going to do next? Oh, one more thing that the Republicans are doing in the Midwest. This is from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Wisconsin, you know about this already. This is not a news story. It's a couple days old. Wisconsin Republican Party is going to run fake Democrats in these recall elections that are going on. There are 8 people that the voters are trying to recall, or 9. 9 senators. 6 of them are Republican and 3 are Democrat. And they're all facing recall elections for their actions on this jackass governor of theirs, Scott Walker, his attempt to be a little Stalinist and outlaw the right of people to collectively bargain if they work for the state. Oh, Jesus. Anyway, so there are 9 senators who are up for possible recall. So in a letter obtained by an organization No Quarter, local Republican Party officials, according to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, are encouraging their Republican colleagues to collect enough signatures to get a fake Democratic candidate on the ballot in each of 2 upcoming recall elections.
These spoiler Democrats, in name only, who are identified by name in the letters, would run in the Democratic primaries for the seats now held by Republican Senator Randy Hopper of Fond du Lac and Republican Senator Luther Olson of Ripon. Both of the fake Democrats have a history of giving almost exclusively to major Republicans. Well, duh, that's why they're called fake Democrats, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. For Christ's sake, wake up. Dan Fayon, chairman of the 6th Congressional District Republican Party, wrote in the letter to fellow conservatives on Friday, quote, "We need to make sure Democrat challengers face primaries. That'll allow our Republicans time to mount a campaign." Dan Fayon continued, "A Democratic primary will push the general election back by 1 month so that Senator Hopper can have more time to organize a campaign against his liberal challenger." Now, also by running these fake Democrats, Republicans know that they'll force the Democratic challengers, the real ones, to spend money on a primary, money that could have been used in the general election. Plus, these fake cockroach bastards, these Republican operatives are going to run as Democrats. Don't you like this? Wouldn't you like to take one of these people behind the barn and just pants them? Just take their pants down and then grab the nearest pitchfork. These candidates, these fake Democrats, could then launch negative attacks on the other Democrat, the real ones, while the Republican incumbents float above the fray. Oh, look, you know, Democrats tearing themselves to pieces again. We're the party of God. We're the party of, you know, being faithful to our wives. To your what? Our wives. And, you know, we go to church and... So that's the plan in Wisconsin. Local Republican officials in La Crosse, Wisconsin, were also secretly recorded on May 25th discussing getting a fake Democratic candidate in the recall election. Now, these campaigns who have heard about this, you know, they deny everything.
Oh, I don't know anything about it. I don't know anything about it. No, not me. I have no idea.
But you know what pisses me off? I don't know if the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel is run by right-wingers. It probably is. But in this article, listen to the sentence. A total of 9 senators, 6 Republicans, and 3 Democrats could face recall elections for their actions on Governor Scott Walker's budget repair measure. Budget repair measure. It doesn't have quotes around it. Budget repair measure. Uh-huh. And there's another point here where the... they refer to these fake Democrats as spoiler Democratic candidates. Spoiler. Instead of saying, these are goddamn Republican operatives. And yes, you can say goddamn in your newspaper. These are Republican operatives. But see, apparently the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel doesn't care about corrupted political events at all. Of course, they'd be the first one to start screaming, the newspaper would, if they found out that one Democrat had voted in the wrong precinct. Voter fraud! Voter fraud! Voter fraud! We'll be right back.
Monkey Right. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. All right, correction here on the story I was telling you about this Republican Senator Sean Hammerlink in Iowa, the one who told the students, I assume they were high school students, to leave, go home, get out of here. I don't like students coming and lobbying me, you know, for money. You know, because the Iowa House and Senate, apparently their budget will decimate, you know, just another state doing what they do, kill education. Prairie 2 writes, the student leaders are actually from the Regent Institutions of Iowa. Spencer Walrath, these are young people there, president of the University of Northern Iowa Student Government. Jared Knight, vice president of the government of the student body at Iowa State University. Elliot Higgins, president of the University of Iowa Student Government. Dr. Lindsay Harshman, a medical school graduate from the University of Iowa, who's the past president of the Council of Graduate and Professional Students. And Michael Apple, a University of Iowa law school student, who is vice president of the Executive Council of Graduate and Professional Students. They testified regarding the effects of the Republican proposed budget on the affordability of college educations. After listening to the remarks, Hammerlink told them, and that's the quote I gave you, he said, quote, I don't like it when students actually come here and lobby me for funds. That's just my opinion. I wish you guys the best. I wish you go home and graduate. But this political fear, leave the circus to us, okay? End quote. Now, of course, the right to petition the government is protected by the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States. All the student leaders testifying in front of this freak were of majority age, they're all over 18, all citizens of Iowa, and all citizens of the United States. And this pig dismissed them. Thank you, Bruce. Didn't want to hear it. The right of the citizens to petition their government. Oh, my God. Oh, well. I think it's time for... Teach your children well. Time for a report card. Their father's hell did slowly go. Kay Petrini is our education affairs correspondent, and I received a summer report card from her, and it reads thus. Hi, Mike. Part of my work as a teacher involves sharing ideas with other educators. One of the best tools we have is an email litserv, where teachers of U.S. government can ask questions, debate the quality of various textbooks, learn about professional development opportunities, and so forth. Excuse me. This morning, there were about 30 listserv messages waiting for me. And one of them had to do with a curriculum project that I will call Republican Talking Points. The name they gave it is, as you know, much less obvious, of course, but I'm going to call it Republican Talking Points. The discussion about the material was interesting, so I decided to see if this would be something I could implement in the fall, which is so much for your caller John's argument. The teachers only work 9 months out of the year. Anyway, as I began looking over the sample lessons from what I call Republican talking points, alarm bells started ringing. I tried to brush it off by telling myself it was just my inner San Francisco liberal reacting to certain hot-button words like authority, privacy, small r, Republican. But as I examined the materials in more detail, I realized that there was good cause for alarm. Here are a few examples of lesson titles. Sam and Sue learn about authority. What is authority? What is a Republican government? Why do we need authority? What are the consequences of privacy? What is meant by returning to fundamental principles? Is it just me, or are the alarm bells ringing for you too? Because I'm not supposed to, you know, judge a book by its cover, I took a closer look at some of the lessons. Here's what I found in the, quote, notes to teachers, end quote.
Authority touches the lives of everyone in society. It affects parents, teachers, children, judges, legislators, and presidents. Some people might view authority as unnecessary, even antithetical to freedom and human dignity. Most people, however, see authority as essential to civilization and valuable to social existence. Americans have always displayed a distrust of authority while looking to authority for resolution of conflict and maintenance of order. Our Constitution clearly reflects this fundamental ambivalence. The Constitution provides for authority, but it also limits its practice. Since government is defined as people and groups with the authority to perform certain functions in a society, it is important to understand the concept of authority and the related concept of power. An understanding of the difference between power and authority is essential for understanding whether people have power, with power, have the right to exercise it. An understanding of the necessity of authority and its usefulness in promoting agreed-upon goals that benefit the individual and society is essential for the development of informed, competent, and responsible citizens. To be fair, Kay writes, the text goes on to mention constitutional limits, but the fact that it literally begins with the word authority is cause for concern, in my opinion. Since when did an introduction to the study of American government start with a primer, on the concept of authority? I can only speak for myself, but as a student in elementary school, high school, and college, the operative word was always freedom. This focus on authority troubles me in the extreme, especially because I do not see very many of my fellow educators calling it into question. But I guess that's understandable in post-Bush America, because to do so would mean that one does not worship at the altar of false equivalency, which is the way this material is to be taught. An example might be, George Bush believed that Saddam had weapons of mass destruction, but others didn't. Do you agree or disagree that America should have gone to war? Why? Why not? So American kids learn that it's all a matter of opinion, and that all opinions are equally valid. We don't dare talk about the lies, the constitutional violations, the war crimes. Well, some of us do. But I digress. So, American kids are now learning about the need for authority, that this is a small r Republican government, that privacy has consequences, and that we must return to fundamental principles in the Constitution. Sounds like a stump speech for one of the Republican presidential hopefuls, doesn't it? And we wonder why this country has gone from being a representative democracy to a corporatist state. This is where and how it starts, in the schools, with young, impressionable minds and carefully chosen vocabulary. I sure hope my school has a sizable budget for Xerox paper this year, because I will most certainly not be relying on a textbook or, God forbid, a curriculum like Republican Talking Points. K.
Teach your children well, as their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by. Don't you ever?
Kay Petrini is
why
a school teacher
you would cry
in San Francisco.
Just look at them and sigh.
Oh, by the way, now, let's see. Afghanistan was the war that, during the campaign, Obama called the proper war. I'm paraphrasing. He didn't say proper. He didn't say good. But he said the right war, the honorable war, whatever. You know, the term he uses is immaterial. the point he was making is material, and that is that what we were doing, are doing, in Afghanistan was totally justifiable. Now, it's my understanding, and I may be completely wrong about this, but I thought we invaded and bombed the living hell out of Afghanistan because it was the hidey hole for Osama bin Laden. And that was our whole purpose for invading Afghanistan, wasn't it? I don't know anymore. I really don't, since it's the longest war the United States has ever been involved in, I think. Longer than World War I and World War II combined. Or was it because we were going to wipe out the Taliban? The Taliban being the mullah types who trained young people in the art of terror, so that they could then use this training to kill Americans or Westerners or whomever the jihadists ordered them to kill, or something like that.
For Christmas, there's just one thing.
Because without dissent, it's not America. Here's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. Sorry about I got so caught up, I got run over by the computer. Anyway, I think the main motive behind Bush's ordering the invasion into Afghanistan was bin Laden, I think. Maybe not. But I think that's what we were told, right? So bin Laden's dead, and the Taliban will never be made dead, ever. And we just continue to kill people in Afghanistan and Pakistan, all under the overarching explanation that we are fighting terrorism. We are not fighting terrorism. You cannot fight a concept. We are not fighting anything. What we are doing is building up more and more hatred and resistance to the United States. Okay. I know that sounds very luxury, and you all know that. So there was talk from Obama, wasn't there, about reducing U.S. troop strength in Afghanistan. And, well, it's not going to be a whole lot, but it's going to be some. Well, okay. There are 100,000 U.S. troops in Afghanistan. Did you know that? I was going to make that a trivia question tomorrow night, and then I knew that nobody would get that. Nobody would get it right. I was surprised when I saw it. In addition, there are another 40,000 from NATO and other so-called partners in the mayhem that we are committing over there. 100,000 U.S. troops. Did you know that? Bet you didn't. So, when do they all start coming home? Well, according to soon-to-be-out-of-there Defense Secretary Robert M. Gates, the U.S. should maintain a long-term military presence in Afghanistan as what he calls a tenant on bases jointly occupied with Afghan forces. You mean those people that can't shoot straight unless they're aiming at American soldiers? According to the Washington Post, he said in an interview with Afghanistan's Tolo news agency that was released yesterday, he said, quote, bases that belong to one country located in another country are always a magnet for trouble. Joint bases from which U.S. troops could provide ongoing training and other assistance would be more tolerable to the Afghan people, end quote. Robert Gates. President Obama will determine how many U.S. troops will come home in initial withdrawals next month. With all combat forces to be gone from Afghanistan by the end of 2014. Honest. Cross my heart and hope to die. 3.5 years. But the Obama administration is negotiating a, quote, strategic partnership, end quote, agreement with the government in Kabul, that would be our little puppet, Hamid Karzai, for the longer term. What is the longer term? Forever. Obama has said he expects the U.S. presence to gradually transition over the next several years to a more diplomatic and foreign assistance role. Although he has promised an unspecified number of U.S. troops are expected to remain forever. The Obama administration, according to the Washington Post, has repeatedly said it plans no permanent bases in Afghanistan. Isn't that what we said about Iraq? No permanent bases in Afghanistan, but, you know, the negotiations with our puppets about specific numbers, missions, and locations have remained secret. The Taliban, with which the U.S. and Afghan governments hope to negotiate an eventual peace accord, has placed the withdrawal of all foreign military forces at the top of its list of demands. Nah, you know, they're just tribesmen. What do they know? They said the same thing to Alexander the Great and Genghis Khan and the Brits twice and the Soviets. Get out of our country. But the United States is going to maintain a presence there forever and ever. Amen. Ryan Crocker, who has been nominated as U.S. Ambassador to Afghanistan, discussed this potential agreement, the U.S.-Afghan agreement, similar in concept to one the United States signed with Iraq. Ryan Crocker discussed the agreement before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee yesterday, calling it a, quote, political framework document that will help normalize our relationship and provide a roadmap for our political, economic, and security cooperation, end quote. And by the way, the Obama administration got a little bit pissed off yesterday with some of the conclusions drawn in a report on U.S. reconstruction aid to Afghanistan by the committee's majority Democratic staff. That would be the Foreign Relations, Senate Foreign Relations Committee. The committee staff praised the education and health programs and other such efforts, but the report described as much as $19 billion spent on civilian aid since 2002 as having only limited success, which is diplomatic talk for it went right in somebody's goddamn pocket. And it questioned whether these programs are sustainable without continued massive flows of U.S. aid. White House spokesman Jay Carney said of the report, quote, while we obviously agree with some aspects of it, we don't believe that its assessment of the overall progress is the same as ours. Move along. There's nothing to see here. What we said before is now inoperative. We're going to be in Afghanistan forever. It is 7 past the hour. Malloy program. We're going to open the phone lines if you want to call. 877-996-2556. There is mountaintop removal mining protests in West Virginia. Hundreds of people are marching toward Blair Mountain in West Virginia to protest mountaintop removal mining. This march is going to culminate Saturday, day after tomorrow, with a rally featuring Robert F. Kennedy Jr., Emmylou Harris, among others, and the documentary The Last Mountain, which examines the threat mountaintop removal mining poses to the environment, has just been released. You can see the trailer for it. Go to thelastmountainmovie.com. Thelastmountainmovie.com. A couple of people commenting. Bo Webb is a member of the Coal River Mountain Watch and the co-founder of Mountain Justice. He said, quote, "Mountaintop removal is a serious threat to America's water supply. It eliminates jobs. It eliminates entire mountain communities. And I believe that mountaintop removal mining is killing real people. In fact, studies show the death rates in communities in coal mining regions are higher than in non-coal mining regions. In the interest of public health and justice, it is the patriotic duty of every member of Congress to end this horrific crime." Bob Kincaid, who has an internet radio program carried by White Rose Society that comes on right after mine, and who's a personal friend, full disclosure, Bob Kincaid, he's the board president of Coal River Mountain Watch. He said today, quote, "Hundreds of activists back in Appalachia are marching along the route taken 90 years ago by working people standing up for their homes, their families, and communities against an oppressive industry. That march culminated in the Battle of Blair Mountain, when the industry, the coal industry, used guns, bombs, and the power of the United States government to stifle dissent. That historic site, like hundreds of America's oldest mountains, is slated for destruction. 90 years later, the coal industry, in conjunction with miners' unions' leadership, routinely uses hostile, threatening language to describe people of goodwill merely trying to save their homes and their heritage. We call upon the coal industry and its partners in Congress to stop spreading lies about the good work of the Environmental Protection Agency and to command their employees and members not to attack or otherwise molest a peaceful march founded in principles of nonviolence." So both Bob Kincaid and Bobby and Bo Webb commenting on this march that will end Sunday at Blair Mountain in West Virginia, unless the marchers are attacked by the kinds of thugs, the real, real brutal thugs that the coal industry usually hires to beat, intimidate, and kill protesters who used to be to beat, intimidate, and kill union organizers. But in so many of these instances, the unions have sided with the industry, as Bob Kincaid points out. So this march goes on today, tomorrow, and Sunday. Saturday and Sunday, ending at Blair Mountain. We'll see what happens. And to Bob Kincaid, if you're listening tonight, once again, please be careful. Kincaid has been threatened, seriously threatened, several times. Now, most of us on the political left have been, but the threats to Kincaid, who lives right there, have been particularly pointed. The death threats that I get, or the threats of violence that I get, are usually by cowards who send me nasty-ass emails. And I've said a million times, if you want to get ass, you have to bring ass. But Kincaid actually lives right in the middle of it. So, to my good friend Bob Kincaid, be careful, watch your back, stay close to the crowd, and I wish I could tell you to go armed, but I don't think Bob Kincaid would do that. So, it's a march that has begun, and it's going to wind up at Blair Mountain in West Virginia Sunday, where there will be a rally with speeches, songs, and attempts by people who live in the region and organizers who live in the region who want nothing more than responsible. If there's going to be coal mining, do it responsibly, which could be done. Doing responsible coal mining means responsible on every level, where it concerns the labor involved, where it concerns the environmental requirements involved, where it concerns safety. It does not mean to blow the tops off of mountains and destroy everything. But coal companies like Massey Energy, they don't give a goddamn. They couldn't care less. They don't live there. Oh, they send their bosses to go live there for a while until the bosses have had enough. But the shareholders, the stakeholders, as they're called, the big boys, of course, Massey Energy, because of its culpability in the deaths of 29 miners, is now sold out to some other company. But they're all criminal sons of bitches. There are very few, if any, coal mine operators or owners who operate from the position that the people going into these death traps are actual human beings and should have a bit of safety enough to make sure that when they go into the ground, they come out. Blair Mountain in West Virginia on Sunday. Apparently on Tuesday on the Fox Radio terrorist broadcast organization, on one of their programs, former Mike Huckabee campaign manager Ed Rollins, remember him? He used to work with the Reagan administration, I think. I forget what he did, but Ed Rollins has been a Republican cockroach for an awful long time. Anyway, he signed up with probable candidate Minnesota Republican Michelle Bachmann on Monday, the day before. So he went on the Fox Radio terrorist broadcast network to explain why he decided to join Michelle Bachmann's organization. Now, Rollins is probably smarter by a factor of 10 than Michelle Bachmann. But listen to what he says, quote, "Well, I'm going to work for Michelle Bachmann if she runs. That's the one that intrigues me the most at this point, and I think to a certain extent she's articulate, she's a conservative, she's got a great story to tell, she's on the Intelligence Committee, you know, she's unknown to the national audience, but she'll become known, and that's the candidacy that I'm going to work for if she runs." Jesus Christ, has this really happened to Ed Rollins? He has sunk lower than, I don't know, a used car salesman on Tampa Street in Tampa, Florida, working one of those up there on Iron Alley. Not Tampa Street, Nebraska Avenue. That's what Ed Rollins has sunk to. He is going to try to tell America that Michelle Bachmann is intelligent, articulate, and has a great story to tell. More on this in just a second.
Have you seen the little piggies crawling in the dirt? And for all the little piggies, life is getting worse. Always having dirt to play around in. Have you seen the bigger piggies
just white sheds. You will find.
He watches C-SPAN so you don't have to. It's More Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. You want to hear something that when I read this a couple of minutes ago, it just, you know, as much of a cynic as I am, and as much contempt and disgust that I carry around inside of me for the American capitalist system, predatory capitalism, this story still, a lot of you already know this, but here's the story. It's from Think Progress. To complete its acquisition of Massmart, a chain of retail stores in South Africa, Walmart struck a deal that must seem extraordinary to the company's American employees. To win government approval in South Africa of the acquisition, Walmart made concessions to a South African labor union, agreeing to avoid worker layoffs, honor existing union contracts, and use local suppliers. Now, the idea that Walmart negotiated with and made concessions to a labor union in South Africa may seem a bit odd to workers in the U.S., where Walmart has developed a reputation as one of the country's most virulent opponents of organized efforts. In fact, Walmart's workers are organized in many of the foreign countries in which it does business, but not here. In Brazil, Argentina, China, the United Kingdom, and now South Africa, Walmart employees are organized. In China, Walmart is required by law to recognize union membership, as though the unions in China are free of government control. Just saying. And in Mexico, 18% of its workers are organized. British labor leaders describe their dealings with Walmart as honest. And in Argentina, organized employees make as much as 40% more than employees at the retailer's major competitors. Walmart has a convenient response as to why it lets workers organize in these countries and not here. As the Washington Post reports, quote, "We have a local philosophy." Walmart International Chief Executive Doug McMillon reportedly told reporters, "We have a local philosophy. It's our intention to demonstrate that we are a great corporate citizen." In Brazil and Argentina, meanwhile, Walmart says it allows workers to unionize because, quote, "That's what the associates want." The associates being the workers. Peter Suarez, Senior Vice President of International Business Development at Walmart, says, quote, "We recognize those rights of the workers in Argentina. In that market, that's what the associates want, and that's the prevailing practice," end quote. To Walmart, however, it matters not what workers want if those workers happen to be American. Former Walmart Executive Vice President John Tate, who also served on Walmart's board, once said, quote, "Labor unions are nothing but blood-sucking parasites living off the productive labor of people who work for a living," end quote. Blood-sucking parasites? That sounds like Neil Bortz. Blood-sucking parasites living off the productive labor of people who work for a living. Walmart claims that view is Tate's alone, is not representative of the company's attitude toward unions. Of course, its history of dealing with American unions tells a whole different story. For 20 years, United Food and Commercial Workers have been trying to organize Walmart employees. At each turn, it has been hammered by the company, which spends millions to oppose organizational efforts. In 2000, when the meat cutting department at a Texas store organized, Walmart responded by closing the meat cutting departments. In 2008, Walmart spent millions fighting the Employees' Free Choice Act,
lobbying against it in Washington, going so far as to summon thousands of Walmart store managers and department heads to mandatory meetings where it warned that voting for Barack Obama would be tantamount to inviting unions in. Luckily, I think progress suggests, luckily for Walmart's American employees, they have a useful ally in, of all places, South Africa. According to the Washington Post, the union that will represent Walmart workers in South Africa went to bat for the company's American employees during its own negotiations. A South African union representative said, "You can't say you violate the right to freedom of association because the culture in that country supports it. We don't accept such an argument." He's referring, of course, to the United States. So what does that say? What does that say to you, Truth Seeker? Huh? Here's this, the most dollar-sucking-in retailer in the history of the human race, Walmart. In other parts of the world, it, and I love the word, allows unions. It allows unions because it wants to suck money from those economies. The unions are there, and in some cases, the unions are backed by the government. And what does Walmart say? Well, you know, we believe in local traditions and customs, and so we'll go ahead and allow these unions to represent our workers, but not in the United States because they are dumbasses. They'll work for anything. Before the hour, it occurred to me that I didn't finish up that Ed Rollins story. Not only is he going to go to work for Michelle Bachmann because he thinks that Michelle Bachmann is articulate and a conservative and intelligent, and, you know, she's on the Intelligence Committee, yada, yada, yada. But he took some opening shots at Sarah Palin, who could be, Rollins knows this is not true, but it could be a potential rival for Bachmann. Palin's not going to do anything. Palin is just rolling in the wealth. Hey, you know, this goddamn governor's job up here. Feh, I'm out of here. I want the big money. And she got it, and she continues to get it. Anyway, Rollins said, quote, Sarah, you like that? Not the former governor. Sarah has not been serious over the last couple of years. She got the vice presidential thing handed to her. Ooh. See, you can't get away from what's his name? Anthony Weiner. You can't get away from it. She got the vice presidential thing handed to her. She didn't go to work in the sense of trying to gain more substance. She gave up her governorship. You know, I think Michelle Bachmann and others have worked hard. Michelle has been a leader of the Tea Party, which is a very important element here. She's an attorney. She's done extraordinary things with family values and what have you. Family values and what have you. Oh, my God. He goes on. So I think she will connect. She's a great, great communicator. And I would say in the race right now today, she is probably the best communicator. Oh, my God.
Yesterday, that was on Tuesday, I think, yesterday, Palin's chief of staff, Michael Glasser, she has a chief of staff or what? He responded, quote,
Beltway political strategist Ed Rollins has a long, long track record of taking high-profile jobs and promptly sticking his foot in his mouth. To no one's surprise, he's done it again, while also fueling a contrived narrative about the presidential race by the mainstream media. One would expect that his woodshed moment is coming and that a retraction will be issued soon.
Oh, God. Michael in Roswell writes, yep, Ed Rollins is earning his money. Money which apparently Bachman leaves on the nightstand. P.S. from Michael in Roswell. He says, the South Africans are getting a bit worried about Walmart's intentions and veracity after that Think Progress report came out. I read that Walmart is now trying to renege on the use of local suppliers, which has made some think they haven't been negotiating in good faith about other points of contention, such as unions. Ed Rollins is leaving his, or is getting his money from Michelle Bachman, who leaves it on the nightstand. Oh, God. You can't get away from the wiener thing, can you? Huh? Like right here. Hey, Stephen, in Burbank.
Hi, Mike.
What's up, pal?
There's a man on the route, the delivery route. I deliver car parts, and he knows who you are. And I pulled in, and I asked him, does it feel like you're sitting in, junior high school homeroom, and you're listening to all the gossip and the vituperation, going on about, I saw Susie's underpants, or right. I'm going to run and tell the teacher you said a bad word,
right.
And all that?
Right.
Isn't that what it seems like with the press and the politicians? Oh, I mean, here they are doing that. They are doing that.
It's just absolutely disgusting. You know, mainstream media or whatever, television, is criticized enough, I think, by people that still can think a little bit anyway rationally. I put myself in that camp. We have been criticizing the ridiculousness of what passes for television news and commentary and opinion for a long time. They're warmongers. Television cameras love a war. They love a beating. They love blood. And then they pixelate it so you can't really see the blood. But really, there's a dead body over there behind our pixelation. And they send all their crack correspondents into war zones that were created by the United States imperialist attitudes. But, you know, when you get right down to it, what they really like is to focus on stories like this. Because it's cheap to do. They don't have to send their top correspondents. They send the third tier reporters to go cover it. They know their market. They know the American public loves to look in somebody else's drawers. The American public loves, you know why? Because most of us have problems in our own drawers. So, you know, this is a good deal. Hey, Anthony Weiner, and he got a funny name. Isn't he skinny? Oh my God, look at that. You know, I mean, it is ridiculous.
And it also has to do with what Kay was talking about in reference to authority. Barbara told me a story, when she was in grade school, on the elementary school playground. They'd run to the teacher, and the teacher would say, look, I don't want you to be a tattletale. Do not try to manipulate the power I have to get you to, seek your revenge on the others and stuff like that. To me, that kind of looks like democracy. It kind of looks like that teacher knew what democracy was, and that teacher said, kids, you're going to have to grow up. You're going to have to start thinking for yourselves. You're going to have to start taking care of yourselves and doing good things for each other rather than try and start fights and rather than try and manipulate, right? Rather mm-hmm. than try and, you know, do all this other nasty stuff.
Mm-hmm.
In junior high school, Sun Valley Junior High School, where I went to, there one morning the tough guy said, oh, look over here, there's a fight, you know, behind the backboards where you play handball. Mm-hmm. And everybody's running over to look at the fight, you know, because they wanted to see the action. When they got there, they were the ones getting beaten up. And I was only like 12, 13 years old. And I don't want to see no stupid fight. You know, what the heck is this, you know?
Right.
And so, you know, I don't know. When are we going to grow up? Not you and me. Not you and me. But
no, members of Congress, members of the media, I guess, again, members of Congress, the House and the Senate, for the most part, 95% of them are joke. They're there for all the wrong reasons. They're not there to work for the betterment of this country. They're there to work for some little parochial issue that they, you know, maybe their church group doesn't like abortion. Ooh, I'm going to get elected and go stop abortion. Maybe their lodge hall thinks that war is a wonderful thing. Ooh, I'm going to go. You know, I mean, it's just crap. It's just garbage and crap. And as far as the media is concerned, television is not a venue of information. It's designed, like we've talked about in this program a thousand times, it's designed to make you forget. It's designed to give you circuitry overload. When you hear the same story 50 times, then 100 times, then 150 times, you become immune. It doesn't mean anything anymore. So when you have news organizations reporting on a 10-year-long war over and over again, I don't care how many famous faces that the ABC, CBS, NBC sends to Afghanistan or Iraq, all of a sudden it doesn't mean anything. Look how little coverage on Iraq. Do you ever see anything on television but Iraq?
Well, I don't have TV. The power structure decided that I'm not going to be allowed to have TV anymore.
What, are you in jail?
No, I bought the digital, you know, when they switched over from analog, and it's crap. You can't get it in, and they cut the power on the signal. We can't get TV at all.
Oh, my
but
gosh.
It was cool, because when we did get TV, we would watch Russian TV. And,
yeah.
And like,
that's an improvement.
Yeah, well, we saw ourselves on it. They were covering a march, an anti-war march in Hollywood, and we saw ourselves on it.
Oh, my God. Well, you know, television in the United States is never going to be more than a medium to distract people, to overload their circuits, to make them forget, to make them immune to people who watch television a lot become desensitized to war, death, destruction, violence, murder. They love to see it, they love to watch it, but it doesn't mean anything. You know, once it gets to the point where war is a nightly segmented part of a newscast, so-called, or murder and mayhem is what your local TV anchors talk about every time they're on the air, then it stops having any meaning whatsoever. And I think that's the function of television news, to make you A, forget, or all of television, to make you A, forget, and B, become so desensitized, nothing means anything anymore. Stephen, I got to leave there. Thanks, pal.
Okay, boss.
Take care. Haven't you had fun tonight?
Hasn't this just been a lovely program? Back to your phone calls. Brian, no, not Brian. Hold on a second. Who we got here? Brian is in Memphis.
Yeah, oh. How you doing?
I'm all right, Brian. How are you?
Oh, hanging on the best we can these days, you know. Do what you can.
Yeah.
Mr. Wiener can hang on one more day because now tomorrow the big news will be Sarah Palin's emails are being released. So hopefully there'll be something in there that'll distract. He took the focus off like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh, the emails that were used in this book or something that one of her former chief of staff wrote?
Something like that, yeah. There's like 24,000, so they'll be going through there. And hopefully she wrote some juicy stuff in there. You never know. I don't use email because it's forever.
Yeah, it is forever. The only thing that would get my attention in her email, Brian, if she wrote something to the effect that she's going to be busy that night slaughtering some sort of bovine creature to her god Satan, and you know she's going to be busy, so don't bother her. She'll be dressed in white and drenched in blood while she makes a ritual sacrifice to the Lord of the Underworld. Thanks, Brian. I mean, that's the only thing I think would be have any interest for me at all in Sarah Palin's emails. Oh, Jesus, God. And the right-wing psychos are after Romney again. Did you hear that? They got the Newtster. They scared the hell out of Mitch Daniels. Who else have they run out? The right-wing crazies, the teabaggers that now own the Republican Party, they're going to reduce it down to a frothing, foaming, gibbering maniac to run for president. But Romney, last week, when Romney rolled out his formal announcement about he's in the race, he was met with a torrent of criticisms from failed Senate candidate. Remember him, Joe Miller, Sarah Palin's secret lover, and fellow candidates, non-candidates, outside groups. For some reason, nobody knew why. Everyone was mad at him for his position on climate change. And what's his position? Well, here's what he said. Where did I get this? Think progress? I don't know. Here's what he said. Quote, I believe the world is getting warmer, and I believe that humans have contributed to that. It's important for us to reduce our emissions of pollutants and greenhouse gases that may be significant contributors. End quote. And he also said some rather ordinary things about energy efficiency. He said, quote, I want to see us become more energy efficient. I'm told that we use almost twice as much energy per person as does a European and more than three times as much as does a Japanese citizen. We could do a lot better. I'd like to see our vehicles and our homes and our systems of insulation and so forth become far more efficient. I believe that we have a role in trying to encourage that to happen. You know, it used to be just nobody gave a damn to hear a Republican candidate say stuff like that. But conservatives have declared Romney's statement to be political suicide. And the Washington Post, I think it was today, contains much the same message from the Washington Post. So far, Romney's reviews from the far right or from the right are not positive. His views about climate change in particular put him at odds with many in his party's base. Bye-bye nomination, Rush Limbaugh said Tuesday on his radio talk show after playing a clip of Romney's climate remark. Another one down. We're in the midst here of discovering that this is all a hoax. Last year has established that the whole premise of man-made global warming is a hoax. And we still have presidential candidates that want to buy into it. Yeah, well, you know, when you want some scientific information, go to Rush Limbaugh. He will certainly handle that for you. So if you want information about how to score illegal pharmaceuticals, you go to Rush Limbaugh. If you're wealthy enough to have a housemaid that you can send to the parking lot of Denny's
to meet somebody named Louie to score a bunch of OxyContin. Rush Limbaugh, you are such a rat son of a bitch. You really are. You are just a rat son of a bitch. Is that clear? So, they...
Bye-bye nomination. Another one down.
It's incredible. The base of the Republican Party is trying to commit suicide because they're all insane, which is okay with me. Do it. Do it. Call the gene pool. But they want to take all of us with them. I say arm them all. And then tell them that the only way Jesus will take them into heaven is if they kill each other. Think that'll work? The Club for Growth, another neo-Nazi organization in this country, issued a white paper criticizing Romney. Club for Growth said, quote, Governor Romney's regulatory record as governor contains some flaws, including a significant one, his support of so-called global warming policies. Ew! 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 I hate these bastards. I hate them with everything in me. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
The IRS.